Boker Tov, world. Today's daf from the Sechet Zvachim brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh is daf Kuf Yud Gimel, and we're holding at the Gemara right after the Mishnah. That, I should say, the whole Perek, basically. And the first thing that the Mishnah brought up was the question of the bringing of a Pora Aduma Bachutz. Now, what would Bachutz mean on a Pora Aduma? After all, the Pora Aduma is meant to be brought Chutz Yerushalayim. So when it said Bachutz, it called it Chutz Migita. It's not very clear what exactly is Gita. I mean, there's no special building in Yerushalayim called Gita Shel HaPora Aduma. So what is that? What is that Chutz Migita? Omer Reish Lakish Chutz Mimakom HaBadukla. It means that outside of the place that had been checked for Kever HaTahom, remember that we're very makpid on the Torah of anything that has to do with the Pora Aduma, which I'll speak about later. And so there was a Mokum that was Miyuchad, that was certainly Tahor, and therefore would be kosher for the Sefer HaPora. Omalo Rabbi Yochanan, I don't understand where you get that from. Valo Kol Eretz Yisrael Bedukagi. You don't need to actually check out to see if there's Dumas Tahom. Eretz Yisrael is considered to be free unless otherwise known, but to be free of just bodies that have been strewn about because they were always makbid to maintain Tahara in Eretz Yisroel. That's not what Gita means. Elam Rabbi Yochanan, it means that you shechted it inside of the walls of Yerushalayim, and since the Pora Aduma needs to be shochut outside of Yerushalayim, that would be the equivalent, strange situation, of what you might think would be Shechitas Chutz, Kamash Balan, since it's not Roy for Pesach or Hel Moed, it's Bechlal not considered to be a din in Aveda B'chutz. Well, why did Rabbi Yochanan have to say that it meant inside Yerushalayim? I mean, he could have said it was just in the wrong place. Couldn't Rabbi Yochanan have said that he shechted the Pora Aduma outside of Yerushalayim, but in the wrong place, because we know that there is a specific place which Rabbi Yochanan holds of. Namely, it has to be actually in a place where it's visible from there, the Petach Ohel Moed. And if he shechted it shelo kineged HaPesach, then that would be Chutz Migita. Yom Revada Bar Ava. If the Pora Aduma was shechted in a place where you could not see the Pesach Ohel Moed, it would be posel, because it says, excuse me, because it says in the posel, v'shochat v'hizah, which means you have to be able to do the hazaat adam towards the heichal immediately from the place in which you were shochet, which rules out shechting in a different location. So what did he have to make this thing that he shechted it in Yerushalayim? He learned out from there, Mahazaata kineged HaPetach, Avshchitata kineged HaPetach, in the same way that you have to sprinkle the dam of the Pora Aduma outside of the Yerushalayim, but directly facing the gate to Yerushalayim, which faces the gate of the Har HaBayit, which faces the gate of the Azara, which faces the entryway into the actual Heichal. So if he shechted it somewhere else, burnt it somewhere else, that would be Ha'alah Shelo Keneged HaPetach. Why did he have to say it was talking about in Yerushalayim? Now, maybe you'll say that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't agree. And he says, look, this is not a Hekesh. These are two different things, because after all, they are two completely different psukim. I want the first pasuk is when Tatem Otal Alazar HaKohen and Hotzi Otal Michutz HaMachane V'Shachat Otal Afanav. That's pasuk number one. And pasuk number two is V'Lakach Alazar HaKohen Midama Be'etzpa'o V'Yiza El Nochach Pnei Ohel Moed Midama Sheva Pa'amim. So, okay, it may be that Rabbi Yochanan simply does not hold that the two are an actual Hekesh. They're separate in Yonim. One refers to Shechita, and one refers to the din of Zrika. And therefore, maybe he holds the only thing that could justifiably be called Chutz L'Mekoma would be something that is beferish against what it says in a pasuk. And since it does say in the pasuk mechutz l'machaneh, then the chutz megita would be in the machaneh. Maybe that's the explanation. The problem is that Itmar Rabbi Yochanan himself is quoted as saying that if you were shachata shelo keneged apetach, Rabbi Yochanan amar psula, because it says v'shachat v'hizah. I mean, that means that he actually darshans that same pasuk that Rav Ada bar Ava darshan. And it's Reish Lakish who says that it's kosher, because there's two different dianim. It says El Michutz LaMachaneh V'Shachato Telefanav is one din, which implies anywhere Michutz LaMachaneh. Then the next pasuk that talks about Hazoya is a completely different din. Rabbi Yochanan says also the Yitmar Nami, how about if you burned the Parah Aduma? And we're not talking about Zrika. You burned the Parah Aduma. Shalok neged apetach. Rabbi Yochanan omer psula again. Rabbi Hoshaya omer kashera. Rabbi Yochanan takes it one step further, because Rabbi Yochanan says, look, the first pasuk said, v'shachato talefanav. The second pasuk said, v'yizah el nocha. But the third pasuk says that it also has to be v'saraf, which it means it's all one long concatenation over here, v'saraf, and that means that wherever I had to do the Shlita, I had to do the Hazoya, I had to do the Sreifa. So if anything, Rabbi Yochanan is the Shita that ought to accept that if it's Chutz L'Gita, it doesn't have to mean in Yerushalayim, it could mean not facing that Petach, and that would be exactly the same. Here, Rabbi Hoshaya says that it's kosher. What's his basis? He says, because since it says al pirsha yisrof, al pirsha means bapashtas on its stomach content, right? But he learns that it's a remes to makom sheporeshet lemita, sham tehisrefata. The point at which its life is distinguished, that's where you can burn it. Now, certainly after Shechita, it's very likely that the pora moved away, which is what the parot usually do after Shechita, is that there's muscular contractions, would have moved it away from the precise place where it could be Petach or Moed. You remember how precise that place was, because it had to be right through the very part of the Petach that wasn't blocked by the next Petach, the top of the next Petach. So if it moved away slightly, it would have been in the wrong place. Nonetheless, the Torah is saying, wherever it actually died, even if it's 10 feet away, it would still be the place where you could be sorefit. And therefore, if that's the case, then that would mean that it doesn't necessarily have to be keneged the petach directly in the same place where you had to do the zrika. So therefore, tainis Reb Hoshaya, there's no need to be in that same place the whole time. You only need to be in that place for the Zrika. But since Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says that Dafke does need to be in the same place, then why did he insist that the only non-kosher place would be in Yerushalayim? No, that was not what Rabbi Yochanan was saying, says the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan was saying, look, obviously we could understand that the meaning of Chutz Megita is outside of Yerushalayim, having moved away from its proper position. I want to tell you a bigger chiddush. I want to tell you that even if you got closer to the Mokom HaMikdash, and even if you were literally keneged HaPetach, that would be called Chutz Megita. Don't think that it's better to bring it closer to Yerushalayim. That's what he was saying. Look, for sure, if you took it away from its correct place, where rachuke rachaka, you brought it further away, well, then, of course, that would be telling me that it's apostle of Shechita. But even if you brought it closer, you brought it into Yerushalayim, afil lifni me'achuma, de karuve kerva, you might have thought, ve'imatit kasher, you might have thought, maybe it's better now that I brought it closer. Kamash v'lan, no, that is considered to be a Shechita psula. But, as the Mishnah says, that's not a Shechita that you chayev on. Why? Because it's not roi lepetach ha'amay. Amar. Amar lo Rabbi Yochanan, v'alo kol Eretz Yisrael bedukahi. Now, what is this machlokas based on? Where does it talk about the question of whether you need to check out Eretz Yisrael from bodies that may be hidden underground? When Rish Lakish says yes, absolutely, Rabbi Yochanan says no, what would be the point in that? Where does it come from? What are they just like, you know, I think that way. Answers the Gemara, no, there's a serious machlokas. From Eichel Mifligin, it's two different ways of understanding the psukim. Mars of Rish Lakish holds that the Mabul affected Eretz Yisrael. So if the Mabul was also in Eretz Yisrael, then that means that anyone who died in the Mabul was very likely, the ground was soaking wet, and gradually bodies of the people that had been drowned would have been absorbed underground, and then when the ground dried after the Mabul, there may very well be hundreds of thousands of bodies under the ground, you know? So therefore, you have to check it out and make sure that your Por Adum is not being brought in a Mokum of Tuma. So says Rish Lakish. Rez Rabbi Yochanan holds, the Mabul never got to Eretz Yisrael. And it's a Pasuk. Omer Nachum Bar Yitzchak, Ushneyem Mikra Chadash, Mikra Chadashu. Both of them darshened the same Pasuk, but they understood it differently. Because since in the Pasuk, we don't know the tonality of the Pasuk, sometimes a pasuk may be a question, and sometimes a pasuk may be a statement, but the Torah doesn't put any question marks, or certainly not interrobangs. And when a pasuk is an interrobang, like this one might be, there is basically no way to know it unless this was the way you were mekabel to read it. So here is what Yechezkel was told. Ben Adam, Amar la, speak to the land of Yisrael, and say to Eretz Yisrael, At Eretz Lomitorahi, you are a land that has never been cleaned from its tuma. Logushma biyom za'am, was never rained upon in that day of anger. So Rabbi Yochanan says, the way to read this is, come on, Eretz Yisrael, Lomitorah, yet you never were cleansed, you have a problem with tuma. After all, Logushma biyom za'am, the Mabul never got to you. So you should be on a higher madriga of not having tuma in your boundary, and you're still carrying on as if you have a right to be tumea. That's how Rabbi Yochanan understands the pasuk, whereas Rish Lakish understands the pasuk kipshutei. It's saying to Eretz Yisrael, after all, you Eretz Yisrael, it's the same exact thing. Eretz lo metoharat, you are acting the way that you always were. You never became tahora. Milo Yordu Gishamim Alayach Beyom Zam. Are you trying to tell me you're sitting over there so fancy and you think you're so Kodesh, you don't have to worry about Tyra? After all, didn't the Mabul come down in Eretz Yisrael? So these are two different ways of reading the Pasuk. And so, depending on how you read the Pasuk, you have a different Alocha Legabe, the Chashash for Kever HaTehom. That would be the point. Esve Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. The Mishnah in Parah says, you remember this amazing story. Now, here's the deal with the Parah. Remember that as far as the Torah is concerned, we don't have any special chumras of Tahira for the Parah Aduma. On the contrary, the Parah Aduma actually has a lower level of Tahira because of the fact that we learn from the Pasuk for Yiza Ish Tahor that, of course, in classic fashion, Yiza Ish Tahor says, the Gemara, that means Tameh. If it says Ish Tahor, so obviously it has to be Tameh. How do you understand that? Because, look, if there's no point in saying Ish Tahor, if that was the whole discussion until now, it must mean an Ish who has some level of Tahira above the person that he is being Zurich on. So then what it means, Ish Tahor, is that he could even be a Tful Yom, as long as he was Metuhar. But because of that, the Tzedukim went nuts. These rabbis are out of their minds. The Torah says Ish Tahor, and they say, yep, since it says Ish Tahor, it means he's Tameh. I mean, come off it. There's limits to insanity. So therefore, they were extremely upset about this one, and the Chachamim went out of their way to really stuff their face in it by making sure that the person who would be working on the Parah Aduma, they made him Tame, and then they put him in a mikveh without waiting for the Har of Shemesh. And that way they did Davka, they utilized it full yom, which absolutely, I mean, this was almost civil war, you can imagine. Now, because of that, listen, better to be worried about those kind of things than about drugs and internet control, right? Okay. So anyway, because of that, people started becoming very makel for the Parah Aduma. You know, apparently it's not such an important thing to make sure that everything is tahar. So to avoid that conclusion on the part of people that since we use a tful yom, you can be makel, this is all for the benefit of Richie, of course, who has this profound aversion to tful yom. And now the Gemara just keeps insisting, Rich, you just got to, you got to swallow it. So they made all of these takonas, which we know are the special chumras, which we call ma'alot asu b'parah. Okay, so they made a lot of chumras. And one of the unbelievable chumras was that in order to take the mayim for mixing with the ashes of the parah, every time that they would go to burn the parah, so remember, we learn out from the Kasher Asah B'Yom Hazeh, we learn out that Yom Kippur and the Parah Aduma, this is to remind you of the whole context of this thing. 7 days before Yom Kippur and 7 days before Sreifas HaParah and the 7 days of the Miluyim are all the same. And you have to go ahead and sprinkle on the Kohen, who's going to be shechting the Parah and burning the Parah, you have to sprinkle on him every day from each of the parot that had been brought during all of history. We kept a little bit of every parah in order to make sure that it would be a lidorot. But that was done with such ceremony that it had to be completely tahar. So how did they make sure something was completely tahar? I mean, anybody who's going to go down there and is going to take the water out of the it has to be Mayim Chaim, so they would go to the Shiloh. I mean, where are they going to get someone that they know is completely tahar? Ah, so what they did is they raised children that were never exposed to Tumah, and those children would be raised on special platforms, which themselves were built in such a way that even if there was Tumas HaTahom underneath, the platforms were staggered so that there would always be an Ohel HaMeis under all areas. So that even if you'd have two on top of each other, they would be staggered so that there would be no way that there would be a place that didn't have a Tefach that was Avir to be Chotzitz Min HaTumah. And since they wanted those kids to be completely tahar, they only let them stay there till they were 9 years old, because sperm of a less than a 9-year-old child is not considered to be able to be mazria. So their sperm is not metame them. And therefore, they would not be tame in any way. They would never have been exposed to any kind of tumah. All kinds of discussions back in the sugya. Well, what about their mothers? Their mothers were tumeyos leida. It's a very beautiful sugya. But in any event, so they had super duper mahadrin children. Right? So you had a badatz hechsher, and you could use this little boy to go ahead and take the water from the shiloach, which would be then completely tahar water. That would be, this is wild stuff, right? But anyway, what do you see from there? That if they had to build these platforms because of Tumas HaTahom, and then the whole way that they took the kids to be able to get to the water, so they had to take them on helicopters so that they would have something underneath, so that in case they were flying over any kind of tumah, it wouldn't become tumah. In case there were no helicopters handy, they had these very big parim, and they put these large doors on them, and then the kids would be protected by the tumah, from the tumah, by the doors that they were sitting on. This is really amazing. Then, of course, what if they touched a type of kli that had been mekabel tumah? No, so all of the kalim had to be made out of pure stone, because stone is not mekabel tumah. Anyway, so they went to these unbelievable extremes, and it was all to protect, or much of it was to protect from Tumas HaTahom. And how can you say they weren't worried about tumas at the home? Take a look at the Mishnah in Purah. Chatzerot hayu b'Yerushalayim. They had these special chatzerot that were built on top of actual bedrock where nothing could be underneath. And then they would make sure that they had made a chalul underneath them, mipnei kever hatahom, in case there was a kever anyway underneath everything. And then they would bring these pregnant women to those chatzerot, and they had to agree to raise their children there, and they were paid for those 9 years raising their kids with the badatz hechsher of completely tahor children. And then when the kids grew up and they were 8 years old, mevi'im shvarim, they bring these big oxen, al gabeim vlatot, and then they would put the kids on top of these doors, tinokot yoshvin aliyam. They would give them these special cups that were made out of pure stone, and they would come down to the shiloach, umil'u, they would fill it up with mayim, and then they would climb back up in the water, sit on top of their doors again, and be brought to the harabaya to be able to do the zrika, to do the mixture of the mayim that would then be put on the coin that was going to be served as upar. Anyway, says Reish Lakish, it's pretty clear from here that they were certainly concerned about Tumas Tahom in Eretz Yisrael. Omer Avuna Berei the Rabbi Yeshua, yeah, but you know the answer to that. Everything that was done with the Parah Aduma was nuts. And this was like another one of these crazy mahalot, which was there in order to overcompensate for the fact that they had made the coin Tomei Bedavka in order to be Motzimi Liban Shel Tzedukim, who claimed that it had to be done only after Harif Shemesh. So that's why. But the truth is, there was no need, Midiraisa, for making sure that there was no Tahom there, because there was never a Kever HaTahom. Actually, Rabbi Yochanan, Tainis to Reish Lakish. Eisve, Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, how can you, Reish Lakish, believe that we needed to be worried about a Kever HaTahom in Yerushalayim, when there was an actual event, as the Braita says, Pa'am Achat Matzu Atzamot L'Shkat Yir HaItzim. So, in one of those special Lishakot, in the Beis HaMikdash, where they would keep the wood for the Mizbeach, and that had to be specially beautifully dried wood, and not to be infested with any type of parasites, worms, Ubikshu, they found human remains in the Dir HaEtzim. Ubikshu Ligzor Tumal Yerushalayim. Bezdin wanted to go and make a gzera that, in fact, you may have to be chayshish for Tumas HaTahom in Yerushalayim. And because of that, Rabbi Yeshua was so distressed, he stood up, Amad Rabbi Yeshua al Raglav v'amar, what's wrong with you people? Lo bushau chlimahi lanu? You don't consider that to be an absolute disgrace? That we would be gozer tuma al ir avotenu? How in the world could you think such a thing? After all, ayei mitei mabul, ayei mitei nevuchadnetzar, how come everywhere but Yerushalayim is filled with Tuma, and we don't find bones around here from all of the people that have been killed by Nebuchadnezzar, all of the people that were there from the time of the Mabul? We see that Yerushalayim obviously was protected from Tumas Tahom. That's how Rabbi Yochanan understands what Rabbi Yeshua was saying. So, I mean, if that's what Rabbi Yeshua said, wasn't he trying to say, there are no such bodies? The Lohava, says Reish Lakish, you just brought a proof against yourself. What are you going to tell me? There were no dead bodies from the attacks of Nebuchadnezzar on Yerushalayim? I mean, that's ridiculous. So obviously, what you're going to tell me, Aruge Nebuchadnezzar, Achinami de Lohave, Elahavi Upaninu. The point that Rabbi Yeshua was making is that despite the fact that Yerushalayim was the site of so many battles and hundreds of thousands of lives lost, in those battles, we do not find that there were any remnants of those people, because they were always careful to clear out any leftover tuma, and therefore, it's ridiculous to make a gezerah. But that's what it means about the Mabul also. Of course there was a Mabul, but anybody that died in the Mabul in order to maintain the Torah of Yerushalayim. They cleared out any of those remaining casualties. What's the problem? Your daf gets a riot to me. But I don't understand, Rish Lakish. If they cleared them away, then they're not there. You're saying we have to make this bedika to make sure they're not there. You just said that you agree with Rabbi Yeshua that they're not there. So basically you're agreeing that I don't care whether it was Hamabal or not. What I care about is whether there was any remaining bodies. No, but you see, the point is, all that Rabbi Yeshua said is that we don't find any human remains in Yerushalayim. That doesn't mean that it was cleared from anywhere else. So Nehi de'ipanem Yerushalayim, but the Paraduma is not shechted and not burned in Yerushalayim. It's outside. And Mikula Eretz Yisrael lo'ipanei. Nobody said that they were cleared out of the whole country, and therefore outside of Yerushalayim, where we're going to be burning the Paraduma, we needed to have a gut that had been checked for Tumas HaTorah. So what's the problem? Actually, this was so much correct, the way that Rish Lakish was learning it in terms of how to make the comparison between the Nebuchadnezzar and the Mabul, that some actually say this was a riot that Rish Lakish had brought against Rabbi Yochanan. That Esther, Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan, after all, Rabbi Yeshua said, where are all the dead from the Mabul? Where are all the dead from Nebuchadnezzar? What does that mean? It means that they were there and they had been cleared out. I mean, that's obviously the meaning of Nebuchadnezzar. So my lav mitahani havu, if he's referring to actual people that had been killed in Yerushalayim, and that was the Nebuchadnezzar reference, so too when he was referring to the Mabul, he meant, and the Mabul which was there, and nonetheless, it must have been cleared out. No? Said Rabbi Yochanan, what's that? Well, how is that a proof? Because the Mabul was never there, and the Nebuchadnezzar had been cleared out. That doesn't mean it's the same point, does it? Now, Rish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan from the Psukim. I mean, look at the holy book, man. What does it say? Mikol asher b'charava metu. Everything on the dry land died. So now, Bishlam, according to me, where I say that the Mabul came down in Eretz Yisrael, so that's why they died. But according to you, why did anyone die in Eretz Yisrael if the Mabul never got there? Says Rabbi Yochanan. Well, that's because of the heat. Remember, the water from the Mabul was hot. Because this is Rav Chista said. The Amr Rav Chista barot chin kilkalu, ubarot chin idonu. Look, the whole deal was, remember this was the Gemara in Tainis that compares the concept of water which fertilizes the earth to human sperm which fertilizes the female. And therefore, what was happening over there was, since they were these completely cynical about the value of sperm, it's sort of like today, you know, let's have races to see whose sperm is faster. I mean, that kind of insanity was such a kilkel and such a bizoyan for human reproduction. The Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, you want to play around with your hot stuff? I'll play around with my hot stuff. Here's my fertilizing. And all the water came down from the Megashamim with the Mabul, boiling hot. So therefore, that meant that anybody, it's true that maybe it didn't rain in Eretz Yisrael, but things got real hot, and therefore everyone died from the heat. And we see that that must be true, because it says when the waters of the Mabul, they subsided, it says, Vayashoku Hamayim, and Yashoku is the same Lashon about cooling down when it came to Achashverosh, V'chamat HaMelech Shachacha. Others say that actually this was a question that Rabbi Yochanan asked Rish Lakish from the Holy Book. It says, Mikol asher b'charava metu. So according to me, there was a charava, because I say the Mabul never made it to Eretz Yisrael. That's why we could refer to the dry land. But according to you, there was no dry land. According to you, the Mabul, you know, we're supposed to actually read the Bible like a bunch of fundamentalists. And it says that everything was covered. And if everything was covered, then Eretz Yisrael was covered. And okay, so then why does it say everything on the dry land died? That just means that used to be the dry land, everything that was the Harava. And the reason that we call it the Harava is to teach me the other din that Rav Chisda pointed out. The Om Rav Chisda, during the time of the Dor HaMabul, there was no gezerah on the fish. Because that's why it's saying, Mikol Asher B'Harava Metu, only land animals died, and not the sea animals. So Lo Dagim Shebayam, and that's why it says B'Harava. All right, so according to Mandi Omer, it says there never was a Mabul in Eretz Yisrael. This explains where the Re'im was able to survive. Because if the Re'im survived, then it certainly wasn't put on the Teva because it was too big for the Teva. And so it must have stood in Eretz Yisrael and survived in the Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael. Elo L'mandi Omer Yarad. How in the world did the Re'im actually survive the Mabul? Omer Ebyanai. Well, they took baby Re'ims that fit on the Teva, and they put the baby Re'ims in the Teva, and that way there was enough room for the Re'ims. But how could that be? If Rabba Bar Bar Chana said, I myself saw this baby Re'im, Anur Zila Derim, and it was only one day old. You know how big it was? It was the size of Har Tabor. You know how big Har Tabor is? 40 parsaot. You took a look at the length of this baby's neck, and it was 3 miles long, you know? And it had a little place where it would put its head down, and that was a parsa and a half, you know? And, oh my God, talking about cleaning diapers. I mean, this baby, Re'im, had one bowel movement, and it completely dammed up the whole Jordan River. Now, how are you going to put a baby Re'im into a teva if it's that size? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, well, maybe they just put its head in the teva. No, its head wouldn't fit. You just said its the head itself was a parsa and a half. Well, maybe they put its nose in the teva. So just the little top of the nose would fit in the teva. But no, that wouldn't be any good because the teva, didn't Rabbi Yochanan said that... Sorry, but I skipped. But didn't Rabbi Yochanan say the Mabul never came down to Eretz Yisrael and therefore the Re'im was able? Why was he the one who said they put the Re'im's nose in the Teva? No, he himself has no problem with the Re'im. He's just saying, my opponent, Reish Lakish, my esteemed opponent, you can't ask on him from here because he could always say, you put the tip of his nose in the Teva. But the teva was moving from one place to another. Its nose would have fallen out of the teva and it would have drowned. Well, they obviously must have tied its horn onto the teva, and that way the nose didn't move. So wherever the teva went, the Re'im was dragged with it. Remember, it's only a little baby Re'im that's only a few hundred miles long. Anyway, obviously all of this is very strange, right? I think that there's very important nekudas here that are essential to understand. Because, you know, obviously, I mean, what are we talking about? There was a Mabul. The Mabul covered the entire earth, but not in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so like what? It's like a force field around Eretz Yisrael to prevent it from coming into Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban in Chumash says, well, no, of course the water must come in from the side, but I mean, that's connected to, it's true there are Midrashim like that, but that's connected the whole sugya over here. The sugya is pretending that it's completely dry in Eretz Yisrael. The rest of the earth has got a wall of water that's covering up Mount Everest, you know, and so on, which of course the entire thing, including, you know, the idea that the mazolas weren't mishamish, and there was no day, and there was no night, and there was no summer, and no winter, and it was only afterwards. That, I mean, this whole thing is crazy. We're sort of compressing geologic time into like a year of a Mabul. And anyway, what do we even mean by time if nothing was running? So listen, gentlemen, you have to remember that the whole period of the Mabul is all part of the Alpayim Tohu. And these stories of Rabba Bar Bar Chana that we talk about, which all of the Mefarshim talk about, and it's the strangest thing, that they're remuzim, of course. I mean, obviously, this is Jack and the Beanstalk stories. I mean, so obviously fairy tales that what in the world does Rabba Bar Bar Chana expect people to make of his crazy stories? You know, it's okay, so you have this approach, that approach, but this Gemara is talking about actually physically describing your experience of reality as if there's such a thing as a ra'im. I mean, Har Tabor is not 40 parsa'ot. I mean, you can make it over, walking over Har Tabor. I mean, come on, what in the world is this referring to? So I think it's extremely important that's mamish, almost what the Gemara is building over here, is a picture of a mythological marble. And that's because the entire period up to the end of Alpayim Tohu is actually called Alpayim Tohu because it is Alpayim Tohu. In other words, the idea you see bichlal throughout the Torah, from the time that each particular stage of the development of the world becomes closer and closer to your own experiences, there's less and less of mythological events that take place, right? Obviously. So we start off with this, with these, you know, almost completely myth stories about the snakes and gardens and so on, all of the way that the Torah presents Maisa Bereishis, which, as the Ramban says, none of this makes any sense, and it's not meant to make any sense. And that was the question of why does the Torah bother telling it to us? That's the part of the Koach Ma'as of Higid Li'amo and so on. So the point of Alpayim Tohu is that it does not bear resemblance to the structure of reality that is post-Tohu. That's the whole idea. That structure is Mevuzes on Terah, which is why afterwards we have Alpayim Terah. Now, you'll notice that this is one of the things we spoke about by Yetzias Mitzrayim, that the difference between soothsaying and all of these, you know, Nostradamus type kind of nonsense that people would take very seriously, and that has some resemblance to the, you know, Madame Scrooge Bopper's psychic store where you pay for your readings and so on. All of this kind of stuff is meaningful only in that milieu in which people actually relate to reality on that level. That is not to say that it's psychosomatic. The point is, let's imagine a case like this. Suppose you've got this wonderful science fiction movie, you know, and you're in a wormhole. Right, and now you're going to be traveling through to a different part of the universe, which you're able to get to because you had to have a shortcut through a wormhole. Now, for all intents and purposes, you understand that that wormhole is mythological, not because it violates your reality of the scientific understanding of the nature of the way the world is, but because it has nothing to do with the world that you live in. It's not part of three-dimensional space, and therefore it's not part of any of your experiences of reality. That doesn't mean it can't be part of the universe, but it has nothing to do with your universe, and that's the whole point of it in being a wormhole. Does that make it mythological? It makes it that it has no reality? Absolutely not. The fact that you have a particular structure of reality within which you live doesn't limit the overall structure of the universe. So the question of your experiences of such a reality, whether it's a science fiction film or whether it's an actual event in the future in which wormholes are actually usable and so on, it really doesn't matter. The same thing is true here. Your experience of a reality that is not part of the universe in which we live means that the entire idea of fine historicity in the Torah's mythological stories is absolutely childish, because it will never be part of your history. In the same way that the Sheshes Yimei Bereishis are by definition not part of history, they're part of a formation of what later becomes history, in which you could have a three-sentence description of a geological change that can take 5 billion years. That's completely understandable, and not just understandable, it's precisely the way to present events that are outside of the range of a creature's limited experience to, in a way that it is really understandable in their words. And that's overall the Dibra Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam. Therefore, when we talk about this, a tremendous insight into Rabba Bar Bar Chana, he's not crazy, and he's not having these insane visions, and he's not believing that these are realities in terms of what we call reality. He is describing his access to mythology in ways that allow you to understand that those early mythological things mean something to us, and they remain sort of like Carl Sagan's, you know, Dragons of Eden. You have a vision of a memory, perhaps, of the time of the dinosaurs, which to you become dragons in your mythology. That's very possible. But it certainly is not part of your experience. You don't really believe in dragons, do you? And the same thing is true over years. When the Gemara is discussing and saying, according to the level of reality at such a time, where time was canceled, and where space was canceled, and the movement of the earth was canceled, and it had nothing to do with the possibilities of physical reality as we experience it, so then these stories need to be self-consistent, even though they don't need to be consistent in any way with reality, but they need to, what we call reality, they need to be self-consistent. And therefore, if you've got a area of the earth that has a force field around it and there was no marble in that area, maybe that would allow for a mythological creature like the Re'im to be living in Eretz Yisrael and so on and so forth. And the implications of that would be Nogadin Yonim of Tumas HaTahom, in the same way the implications of the story of the Nachash allow you to find dinosaur bones. It's exactly the same story. So therefore, we're taking it as a literal description because in terms of itself, it is literal. Okay, so anyway, so they tied the horns of the Re'im to the Teva, and that way its nose wouldn't fall out of the Teva. The Amr of Chista, but I thought you said it was boiling hot the water. Anshi Dora Mabo Barotchim Kilkulo Barotchim Nidono. No, and according to you, how in the world did the Teva of Noach actually float on the water if it was covered with pitch to waterproof it? If you put something with pitch into boiling hot water, the pitch is going to fall off very rapidly, and there goes the cook, Noach, and his family having a wonderful time in what was once the Teva. So the whole story doesn't make sense anyway. It's not self-consistent, because how could the Teva be Sagya? And besides that, you're forgetting all about Og Melech HaBashan. How did Og Melech HaBashan stand in all of that boiling water without getting cooked? Even if he was attached to the Teva as far as getting his food and whatever, obviously it must be that the water around the Teva was cooled miraculously. So the rest of the world was hot and that area was cool. And that explains also why the fish didn't get killed. Well, so according to Rish Lakish, let's say that the Mabo actually did come to Eretz Yisrael. So nehi nami, the Yorad Mabul la Eretz Yisrael. But the question is, we know from the Pasuk that the bodies that were drowned in the Mabo did not stay in Eretz Yisrael. Because remember, Rish Lakish himself said, why is Bavel also referred to in the Pasuk as the Mitzula? These are a couple of psukim where HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers the Bavel as Tzula, Omer Letzula, Charevi, and so on. So why was it called the Tzula, which is Loshon Mitzula? And that's because Shekol Meitei Mabul Nitzdalalu Sham, since that is the valley, that Mesopotamia, so that valley is actually where everything, all the water ended up coming down, carrying with it all of the bodies from the Mabul, which then sunk there as the flood water gradually receded. So they all ended up in Bavel, which means that they weren't stuck in Eretz Yisrael, even if you hold that the Mabul did come down to Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Yochanan says, why is Bavel called Shinar? Because they were all shaken out there and they ended up getting dumped in Bavel. So that's the point. So anyway, even according to you that the Mabul was there, why do we need to check for Tumas HaTahom if all of the Meite Mabul ended up not being there? Well, I mean, if according to Rish Lakish there was a Mabul in Eretz Yisrael, there must have been some of the casualties that got stuck in the mud, no? Rabbi Abbo says, well, I have a different approach to why Bava was called Shinar. It was called Shinar because they always shake down the wealthy. So Shinar means to shake them down. So which means that the government always gets you on taxes over there. But actually, it means, like the Gemara says elsewhere, that in Bavel they don't give tzedakah, and because of that, you don't have anybody that's got money. What do you mean you don't have? There's plenty of very fabulously rich people in Bavel. I mean, like a chazina d'ahava. True, but they don't have wealth for three generations. And after all, somebody who is zoicha to give tzedakah, it says on him, v'chesed Hashem me'olam ad olam al yireyav, v'tzidkaso livnei vanim, which means that his money would survive three generations, would be given to his grandchildren. That you don't see in Bava. Chlat dori lok mamashim. So they may have individuals who are rich, but they all end up losing their money a generation later. Omer Rabbi Abi. Rabbi Abi, another thing is that if you eat any of the dirt of Bavel gets into your food, it's like you're eating the flesh of your own forefathers. Tanya Ami Achi, Kolo Ochel Mi Afarash of Bavel Kilo Ochel Basar Avotav. V'yesharim Kilo Ochel Shikatsim V'rimasim, because of the fact that everything that died in the marble ended up in Bavel. Okay, the next thing that we learned was about the Sar HaMishtaleach. It says the Sar HaMishtaleach, it was meant to be sent, obviously, off of the hill of to the Azazel. And if you built a Mizbeach, and you went ahead and you were makriv it, you would not be chayiv, because it says in the Pasuk, the Pesach HaMoed, Lo Eviyo. And this is not meant to be in the Pesach HaMoed. Yes, the Gemara, what are you going to do with the Braita that learns the whole pasuk that we've been darshening all along? So what's the meaning of korban la'Hashem? So first the Braita says korban la'Hashem means that if it was chulin and it wasn't mekudesh la'Hashem, then you can't call it a korban la'Hashem, and you would be potter. So if you just bring chulin b'chutz, that's not considered to be shrutei chutz or halos chutz. Ask the Braita, maybe that's not what it means. Maybe korban means to be including even kashe berek habayit. So if the korban did not belong to the mizbeah, and it was just kashe berek habayit, now, I know that you'll say, well, that's not a sacrifice. Yeah, but korban doesn't mean a sacrifice. That's just a goyish translation. A korban comes from the word karev, something that is brought to. So it's a gift. Okay, we find the word korban referring even to kashe berek habayit, because after Milchemet Midyan, they say, v'nakrev et korban Hashem, and that korban Hashem consisted of jewelry. Ish asher matza klei zahav, et sadat, samid, tabat, agil, and so on. And that was the korban that they're bringing l'chaper al nafshoteinu. So obviously we use the word korban for things that are not animal sacrifices. So maybe that's what it means over here, even something that belonged to the berek habayit. And that's why it says korban as a riboy, not as a miud. Talmud lomar, that's why it says al petach o'amoed lo hevi'o mi shera'u l'vo ba'o'amoed. So only something that was meant to come into the Omoyed, as opposed to kotche berek habayit, she'inan ru'uyin lavo. So they're not meant to come into the Omoyed. Otsia telu she'inan ru'uyin. So maybe I should only exclude these things which are bechlal not roy lavo el Omoyed. But what about the Sar HaMishtaleach? The Sar HaMishtaleach is ru'uy lavo El Petach Ohamoi, because you cannot bring a Sar HaMishtaleach without first doing the Hagralah and without first doing the Vidui that the Kohen Gadol has to do. And that's all done inside of the Beis HaMikdash. And only then do we take the Sar HaMishtaleach. So you can't call it not Roy Lavo El Petach Ohamoi. So maybe, in fact, the Sar HaMishtaleach, you would be chayiv. Therefore, it adds the word instead of simply saying to the Petach Ohel Moed, it talks out in the Pasuk that it's to bring it as a Korban LaHashem, specifically. And that means it has to be something which is Miyuchad LaHashem. And that excludes the Chzer LaZazel. The Chzer LaZazel is not considered to be Miyuchad LaHashem, since it's given to the Azazel. So now we've got a real contradiction here. Because the Braita says the only way that we know that the Sara Mishtaleach is not Mechayev you on Shkut Echud is because it says LaHashem. And the Mishnah claimed that the way that we know that the Sara Mishtaleach is not Chayev is because of the Pasuk of Pesach HaOmer Lo Hevia. So I don't understand. How do we explain the... This is like one of the earliest Braitot. This is like the fundamental Braita in the whole Sugya and Teres Kayanim. Like Hashem, it's no problem. There is a time in which the Sara LaZazel has to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash, because it needs to go through the Hagralah. So in the Braita we're talking about, okay, what if it would be Kodem HaHagralah? So if it's Kodem HaHagralah, then it's meant to be brought to the Pesach Ohel Moed, right? So you can't exclude it from the Pesach, because it is meant to be brought, and it will be brought to the Pesach Ohel Moed, except that you went ahead and you shechted it and brought it up b'chutz. So over there, I cannot exclude it from the Pesach of El Pesach Ohel Moed. That's why the Braita needed to exclude it from the extra word of LaHashem, and therefore not LaAzazel. Mashenke, in the Mishnah, we were saying, okay, you've already done the Hagralah, and now you shechted and brought the Sar LaAzazel Pachutz. How do I know that you're Pater? Because it wasn't meant to be Bo'ava Pesach Ohel Moed. Excuse me. It certainly was. What's the difference? Even if it's Achar Hagralah, you would still be Mechuyev to say the Vidui, wouldn't you? Ha'ika Vidui. And the Vidui has to be done in the Ohel Moed proper, so it is meant to be brought to Pesach Ohel Moed. El Omer of Money, okay, you're right. But it's not a problem. In the Braita we're talking about before you said the Vidui. So then you do have to bring it to Pesach Ohel Moed, right? Okay, so now if I shecht it b'chutz, you can't tell me, oh, you're going to be putter, because it says, El Pesach Ohel Moed lo hevio, because I should have brought it to Pesach Ohel Moed. Therefore, I need another miut, and that's the miut that the Braita brings, which is LaHashem, to tell me that this is meant LaHazazel, and therefore it's not miyuchad LaHashem. Ooh, wow. What fun sugyas, huh?